We'll call a meeting of the Agriculture and Rural Development Committee to order, February 8th, 2005, the hour of 2:30 p.m. having arrived. We do not have a quorum quite yet, but we will start with some more testimony, and then we do have several amendments to take a look at, and then we will be voting on this bill by 4:15. If it happens to be by 3:15, then I guess we just got done early. So with that, how far are we from a quorum? Yeah, Junkie? We're a little ways away. Okay, we'd like to start out with Mr. Brad Nelson. I'll be moving Senate File 4, which is House File 223, when we actually have a quorum. But we'd like Mr. Brad Nelson from the Minnesota Ethanol Producers Association to come forward, and then Ward Formal from the Minnesota Corn Growers. And then we'll be moving the bill and an amendment that I would like Mr. Bob Krogman to comment on. Mr. Krogman, if this amendment goes on, his group will be supporting the bill, but we do want to talk about that amendment first to get the bill in the shape we need to. Now, as you know, this bill has moved through lightning speed through the Senate. I was interviewed yesterday by a reporter, and they said, well, you know, they really got it done quick over there in the Senate. And I said, yeah, they got it done quick, and we're going to get it done right. My concern is on this bill, it has to work. It has to work for all parties, or it works for no one. So that being said, I'd also like to from the chair, hope that Senator Dallas Sams is doing well. The latest report I've had is that he is doing well. You know, he's taken by ambulance yesterday to the hospital, and apparently things are going good, and we'll keep him in our prayers and hope that he makes a speedy recovery, because he's got an ethanol bill to pass. I guess he's got his pass, so he can, but we need to get ours going. So we wish Senator Dallas Sams only the best in a very quick recovery. With that, welcome to the committee, gentlemen. If you could please make your presentation. You were so kind as to come back. We had you on, or your groups on, last time. We ran out of time, and you're so gracious to agree to come back today. So if you could please present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brad Nelson, and I'm a third-generation farmer in Freeborn County. I also serve on the Excel Board of Directors and am president of the Minnesota Ethanol Producers Association. Once again, I thank you for the opportunity to testify to today on this important issue. Every year, we as corn growers in Minnesota have 30,000 manufacturing plants per acre. They are converting energy from the sun, nutrients and water from the soil into kernels of corn. They are storage vessels for starch, protein, minerals, and other components. Every acre can produce enough starch to make 400 to 500 gallons of clean 113-octane ethanol and 1.25 tons of dry distiller grains, a 26% to 27% protein feed supplement for our livestock industry. Minnesota corn production in general is trending up. In the early 90s, our state produced approximately 750 million bushels of corn. The last 2 years, our state has produced over 1 billion bushels of corn. Of that total, the state has processed 144 million bushels of corn. Our state continues to export well over half of our corn production. These figures tell me that there is plenty of corn to meet our state's needs in all industries that utilize corn. In following the fuel market since I became involved in this industry, some of the reasons I have heard for fuel price increases to consumers is because we don't have enough refining capacity in the United States, or a refinery in particular location is shut down for one reason or another. We are also told that no new refineries are being built. In my mind, as we build ethanol plants, we are adding refining capacity to meet our country's and state's needs. When a load of ethanol leaves a plant, it is ready to enter the fuel supply as a hot, high-octane, clean-burning product. The ethanol plants are new and efficient, and according to studies done by USDA, the net energy balance for a dry mill plant is 1.7 to 1, far better than the energy balance in the production of crude oil or gasoline from crude oil. Then let's not forget about the economic benefits of having a 40 million gallon plant in Minnesota. 40 direct new full-time jobs. 40 families move to or stay in greater Minnesota. $65 million in annual expenditures. 120,000 gallons of fuel is made every day. It benefits schools, churches, and other businesses, and the overall tax base. I believe the corn is there to meet all end users' and exporters' needs. We also add a 26 to 27% protein feed alternative to the livestock industry. We reduce fuel imports into our state, which should lower costs to the consumer, and we create more jobs in our state. Another concern I've heard is whether 20% blends with void warranties on our vehicles. There are many more qualified to comment on manufacturers' warranty issues, but I do wonder how Brazil can use a higher blend rate in their vehicles. They are already doing it. So is it that the automakers can't, or that they don't want to? It really makes me wonder. The good news is that we will have time to work on and solve this issue. Some benefits I see for all Minnesotans, whether they live in the metro area or rural parts of our state, are competition from a larger supply of uninterrupted fuel coming from a new source. The laws of supply and demand say that this is good for the consumer. Less dependence on foreign oil. Today, 10% of our fuel dollars circulate in our economy. Tomorrow, it can be 20 to 30% of our fuel dollar. More economic impact for the entire state. It keeps dollars in our state and tax dollars here where they help us all. Keeps people where the infrastructure already exists in the form of schools, businesses, and roads of outstate Minnesota. It is not the entire answer, but it is a piece of the puzzle and a move in the right direction. Some folks are concerned about the mandate. Nobody likes being told what to do. Eventually, we will move to higher blends anyway because it is the right thing to do. The 20% initiative will give market access through the present distribution system when today there is no access to a 20% blend. With the positive energy balance of ethanol, we need to use more ethanol in Minnesota, especially when we are importing fuel and producing more corn and ethanol in the state than we are currently using. Let's add value here. Let's turn the dollars here where it helps all Minnesotans. You as legislators led the nation at the beginning of this industry. Let's continue to lead the nation in renewable fuels. Thank you once again for this opportunity.
Thank you, sir. If the next gentleman could please identify himself and who he represents for the record, please. And but before we do that, excuse me, I'll officially call the meeting to order. We do now have a quorum with the members that are here and those that are checked in. Representative Ruth Johnson graciously moves the minutes from Wednesday, February 2nd. Any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved for February 2nd. I will now officially move, and members, in your packets, there was some information about the Brazilian questions and how they're doing it, and some more information about ethanol there. I will now move that Senate File 4, we have Senate File 4 before us, which is the companion to House File 223, or we're going to make it that way anyways. I will move that and recommend that if it is amended, that it passes to the Environment Policy Committee. So that will be the motion, but we'll hear the rest of the testimony, and then we will get into the bill itself. So now we actually have the bill before us. If you would please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Warren Formo. I serve on the staff of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm standing in for Gene Sandager, our president, who was on tap to testify last week, but is unable to be here today as he's represented us at some national meetings with the Renewable Fuels Association. I will be showing some slides that were in the blue book that we handed out last week, so I just want to refer you to that. We left a binder with some resource information on ethanol, and these charts are all in that book, so I just want to let you know that for reference. Minnesota is recognized across the country for our leadership in renewable fuels. We were the first state to replace 10% of our gas with ethanol, and we now have a tremendous opportunity to establish a goal and a plan for replacing another 10%. We fully support this plan that's been put forward and which has received much bipartisan support. Previous discussion on moving to 20% ethanol has raised some questions and concerns, but really true opposition has been minimal. I'd like to respond to some of the concerns. Concern number one is that we won't have enough ethanol. The fact is that by the end of 2005, we will already have the production capacity in place right here in Minnesota to nearly meet the projected demand in 2010. Additional investments in Minnesota ethanol plants are already being made. Concern number two is that there won't be enough livestock for corn and export, for livestock and export markets. Our organization fully recognizes the importance of the livestock sector as a market for corn and as a major part of our rural economy. We also support export markets, which consume about 20% of the U.S. corn crop. The Minnesota Corn Growers and the Minnesota Corn Research and Promotion Council spend nearly $1 million each year on promotion and research related to the livestock and export industries. You can see here one of the recent ad campaigns that we've been running, and you may have also heard on the radio some ads that speak about the value of livestock to our Minnesota economy. The fact is, corn production is rising to meet the new demand that we are creating while still meeting these needs of traditional markets. Both U.S. and Minnesota corn production statistics show that there is more corn available now, even after subtracting corn used for ethanol, than there was 20 years ago. This chart shows 24 years of corn data. This chart is the same chart with the ethanol bushels removed. You can see that it doesn't change very much when you look at it graphically. There's still plenty of corn available for these new markets. Add to this the fact that one-third of the corn ground for ethanol is converted to DDGS, which is being used in livestock rations. Corn use data shows that the livestock industry continues as a steady, reliable corn market. You can see the blue section at the bottom of this chart is feed use of corn. And you can see that it's been a very steady market and it's projected to continue so. Concern number three, it's been said that ethanol is a net energy loser. The only study to come up with a negative energy value for ethanol has been completely discredited numerous times, but continues to resurface every time there's a discussion on the subject. The fact is, dry mill corn to ethanol production returns 1.77 BTUs of energy for every BTU of input, making ethanol production more than twice as efficient as gasoline production. We also need to look at the trends. Ethanol production continues to get more efficient. The mills are always looking for ways to reduce their energy consumption. Corn production is getting more efficient at the same time. Our single largest input is our land, and this chart shows that the trend is for our corn acres to produce about 2% more BTUs every year than the previous year. Essentially, what that is a chart of corn yields, but we've converted it from bushels to BTUs. You should also know that we are doing this with less fertilizer per bushel of corn produced. This chart shows the corn output per pound of fertilizer used, and so that upward trend shows that we're getting much more efficient with fertilizer use. Another reason why we're achieving that 1.77 conversion number. Concern number four, ethanol doesn't really help the environment. The fact is that ethanol reduces pollution from the field to our cars and back to the field again. As I said earlier, we are growing corn more efficiently in terms of fertilizer use. That helps protect water quality. Our growing corn also takes carbon out of the air. By all accounts, ethanol reduces total emissions of greenhouse gas pollutants. Studies done in Minnesota since we began using 10% blends show that the quality of the other 90% of our gas varies widely, and that many of the problems blamed on ethanol could actually be a result of variability in the base gas. As a high-octane fuel source, ethanol replaces some of the nastiest components in our gas supply. Concern number five, 20% ethanol is harmful to engines and will void warranties. Fact is, internal combustion engines can run and were invented to run on alcohol. Once automakers know that we're serious about this initiative, they will respond. Several already have. Several other countries already are using higher levels of ethanol. Some have suggested that we should promote E85 more aggressively and not require 20% ethanol. Fact is, the automakers as a whole have been somewhat lukewarm in their support of the Minnesota E85 team. We do appreciate the support we've had, and we appreciate the growth in the market. But the effort of all the automakers combined pales in comparison to the work done by the corn growers and by the American Lung Association, who have been the real workhorses in the E85 team. They're the ones, speaking in particular of ALA of Minnesota, they are the groups that are getting the pumps in place, and they have built this 3 million gallon per year market. The automakers want the CAFE credits, which they get for manufacturing the flex fuel vehicles, but their behavior really indicates that once they've manufactured them, it doesn't matter whether the drivers use E85. An E20 requirement may provide the necessary incentive for them to get more involved with our E85 team and actually encourage the use of E85 by optimizing the vehicles for its use and then promoting the use of E85. This proposal allows ample time for all of the necessary work to be done for fuel and vehicle certification, and we stand ready to work with the auto and fuel industries to implement this plan, just as we have ever since ethanol was first brought into our fuel market. We will continue to play an active role in educating and promoting regarding ethanol. Many of you have seen our vehicles on display and in parades, and we will continue to do this. We have been running FFVs on E85 since they became available, and we have converted numerous small engines on golf carts, lawnmowers, and other small engines to run on E85 without component failures and with very minor modifications. Concern number 6, mandates are bad. We agree, and we're very thankful that this proposal that's been put forward would help us change the current mandate that requires 90% of our gas to be a non-renewable petroleum product that we don't have here. Thanks to the leadership shown by this legislature several years ago, Minnesota is the recognized leader in renewable fuels. Other states are now looking to do what we have done. This proposal provides a new opportunity to keep Minnesota in the lead. I want to thank you for the opportunity to address this committee and for your consideration of this proposal.
Thank you. Any questions for either the gentlemen that have just testified? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Now, I will, again, we're working off Senate File 4. I move Senate File 4 be recommended to pass the Senate Environment Policy Committee. Members, if you'd please look at page 2. This bill is different from the House file, and I want to point out on page 2, line 23, number 2, federal government has not been granted for the, or that federal approval has not been granted for the use of E20 as gasoline. That's the issue regarding that it would take federal approval, and that has to do with the studies and so forth that hopefully we can find from that E20 is safe for engines, and we can work out the warranty problem there. Now, again, members, as you know, this bill has passed the Senate floor, and my concern about the speed, I mean, it's, you know, we want to see how quick we can get this passed. Everybody does, I think, but there are some concerns that people have, and the House Ag Committee has been listening very carefully, both sides of the aisle, to those concerns, and I want to assure everyone that's here that we'll continue to listen to those concerns. There's a couple of them, there's one amendment that we're going to address today, but there will be more concerns coming up. There will be a movement by some to move out the date further from 2012 to 2015, I believe it was. For the chair, that's a non-starter, but we'll go through the process, and they can certainly work with members to see where we go there, but that's not up for discussion today. Then we've got the liability issues here, and when we introduce the amendment and discuss the amendment, that will may create some concerns for others, and it'll probably mean to stop at civil law, because my question will be, and I just want to be right up front, we are limiting liability to the retailers and refiners, but the question we have to ask in civil law, and that's not a question for today, is, okay, if it's been relieved from those folks, then does it go someplace else? And so that's a concern. I just want to be up front and get some of these concerns on the table. Before I move the amendment, I would ask if there's anyone that wishes to testify against, not so much against the bill, but that has concerns, we'll say. I'm trying to be very sensitive here. Oh, why? Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I certainly do have some concerns, and it would be more, you know, for me, being a farmer and looking at it statewide, I feel like I'm asking my mother to divulge secrets from her past, or I don't like apple pie, but I think that we have focused, and tell me if I'm wrong, on automobile engines and their warranties and such. But realize that as farmers, we use a lot of small engines. And I represent two large and vital companies that really are bread and butter that use small engines for recreational vehicles. And within the, for example, the snowmobile engines, there are no oxygen sensors. And so, I get concerned, and these are questions I need to have answered. And I know you do too. You don't want to put tourism out of Minnesota or make us an island unto ourselves. So that's...
And I believe, and Sam helped me out here now, in current law, you can have non-oxygenated fuel for small engines, and I do not believe in this bill we're changing that. Help me out. I want to make sure I'm saying the right thing. Sam?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, that is correct. That provision would not change at all. In fact, it is on page 2, lines 3, 4, and 5 of the bill. Those are the exceptions in subdivisions 10 through 14.
Mm-hmm. Thank you,
and Mr. Chair, I do understand that. And one of the things that I have requested already is a map of Minnesota with where those fuels are. I actually think we have quite a few of them up in our area, but because we're not, big on the ethanol production up there, you didn't give us plans. Anyway. And we don't raise a lot of corn, so I understand that too. For example, in biodiesel, I have concerns up there about getting it blended right now. I'm very much in favor of biodiesel. It's the clean, it's the way to go. But we're concerned about blending rather than splash blending. So I'd like to see a map. And then we, and I do approve of this, but then we are saying, consumer, when you come into the state, you be sure that you purchase that. So we want to be sure it's available. If they come in to do something where they cannot have ethanol in their fuel, then we want to have that available. Otherwise, we've got them, bringing a tanker with, too, which they might not do. I'm being facetious, but I really think it is legitimate. The questions are legitimate.
Absolutely. Okay, other comments to the bill at this point? If not, we'll go into the amendment, and then we'll see what happens in the amendment, and then we'll go from there with further discussion on the bill. And so I didn't see any hands as far as anyone in the audience who wished to testify with concerns or opposed to the bill. Because, and just for all the interested parties on this bill, if you have concerns, please come to us. Many of you have, and we've worked with you. The door has been open, and maybe you've gotten to know Denise and Craig quite well. But please feel free, if you do have concerns, to come to us with those concerns, and we'll see if it works. Some things might work, some things might not. Okay. With that, I will move the S-000482 amendment. And members, what this amendment does, this one was brought to me, first of all, it was to be written with the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association in mind, so that they had some concerns. They didn't want to expose their members to potential more liability, and I offer this amendment. Some may say, well, you might be concerned about, there might be some problems, but I offer it because I'm so confident of what ethanol has done and such a believer that I don't think there's a problem with it, so I really don't see a problem with the amendment. And if you read the amendment, basically we're just saying that it should be deemed, no motor fuel is defined under Section 296.8.01 Subdivision 33 shall be deemed to be a defective product, nor any manufacturer motor fueled engines be liable for warranties or repairs thereto if the motor fuel has not been prohibited from use by the federal government. So we're saying it kind of goes in tandem. If on page 2, lines 23 through 24, move forward where we do have the federal approval, then it limits their liability, but not only their liability, but it also you'd be looking at the refiners would have their liability limit there too. And I commented from the angle that this is a proven fuel. We know it's there. Now, it begs the question of what happens if there would be a situation where somebody put in the wrong fuel or put diesel fuel in gas or did some things like that. We're not going to have this crafter. We're not going after the normal negligence or things like that. Those would still, the owners of the business would still be responsible for those. But as far as the fuel itself, we would, well, you can read the amendment there. Any discussion on the amendment? And I believe that if we pass this, then the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association would be neutral on the bill. Mr. Crum, why don't you come down so we can get you on the tape here. This does not leave all the concerns, just so members know, this does not leave all the concerns of the refiners, but we're continuing to discuss some issues with them. They like this language, I believe, too, don't they? I know you don't represent them, but I think they're fine with this. They have some other concerns, too. Mr. Krogman?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Krogman. I'm with the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. I can't speak for the refiners.
Okay.
Our look at this today would seem to address our concerns that we could be held liable if, in fact, down the road, E20 did void warranties. Because as the seller of the fuel, we're always brought in that you sold me something that screwed up my car, for lack of a better word. And this would seem to give us some protection from that.
Well, you're still going to get it to screw up somebody's car, Mr. Krogman, but not because of ethanol.
Very possible.
And that's your concern?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Krogman?
Just a comment, actually. Mr. Krogman and I have talked about this. While he's saying he's neutral on the bill, I really do think most of his dealers support it because there's a slight decrease in the mileage you get, and since they make their money by pumping gallons, they'll actually pump more gallonage with this bill than they would under a current situation.
And Mr. Krogman, thank you, Representative Junkie. For the record, if this amendment passes as we have before us, what's your association's position on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, prior to the amendment, our position was that we do not oppose the bill. We sell motor fuel. We buy it from refiners, suppliers, and we resell it. As long as it meets state specifications and doesn't walk us into legal problems, we sell motor fuel. We don't need large expenses to convert an infrastructure for a new type of fuel. We don't have to put in another tank or pump because we have to carry another grade. It also does not void the warranties in our equipment. That was one of our first concerns. When you bury a tank, you've got a 20 or 30-year warranty on it that it doesn't leak. This does not void those warranties. So as we look at it, we're selling motor fuel. 80% gasoline, 20% ethanol. We'll do that.
Well, okay, that's without this amendment, you are neutral. Now, with this amendment, are you supporting me?
Mr. Chairman, we don't oppose.
Good.
Good try.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Krogman. Any more questions for Mr. Bob Krogman with the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers? Thank you for that ringing endorsement of neutrality. Okay, thank you. Any questions to the amendment? If not, I'll renew my motion that S-000-482 be amended on. Any further questions? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill before us as amended. Any questions from the audience? Any questions from members? Hearing none, I will renew my motion that Senate File 4 as amended be recommended pass and sent to the Committee on Environment Policy. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, before you were all here, I made a few comments. Senator Dallas Sams was taken by ambulance late yesterday afternoon, I believe, to the hospital. The latest word we have is that he's doing well. He had a good morning. He's doing well. And if you could just remember him in your prayers tonight, maybe drop him a card or give him a telephone call. I think he'd really appreciate that. We're going to go over and see what's going on now. So just remember Dallas Sams here. We need to get him back healthy again and amongst us. So with that, our next committee meeting is tomorrow. Mr. Clark, what bills do we have up tomorrow? We have a Pennis bill and a Junkie bill. I'm sure they're two fine pieces of legislation. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.